content used to take me like 10 to 15 hours a week, and now it takes 5 hours. And that's one newsletter, one blog, 2 video tutorials, 5 LinkedIn posts, 5 Instagram posts, 10 tweets, and 1 product review. And that's weekly.
Hello, and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram, and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Today's episode feels quite special because I've just finished recording with our guest and I feel like I've had about 20 coffees. You know when you're just brimming with ideas and things you want to go in action after speaking to someone? I hope that my conversation with Ashley Gross, all about AI, has the same impact for you. Ashley is the founder of the Prompt Community, where she's providing loads of super useful content about generative AI and helping people actually solve problems rather than the usual, here's 50 AI tools you need to use right now. There's a lot of that online, and Prompt is a bit different. Soon it's going to be a membership. It will later have a conference, and she's already got a book coming out, even though she literally started her business this January. Now, I don't want you to fall into the comparison trap when listening of thinking maybe I need to be achieving as much as her in a really short time as well. It's not that. What I hope you take from this is huge inspiration, but also the knowledge that AI and Web3 is for absolutely everybody and is never too late to start learning and experimenting with this tech. So without further ado, here's Ashley. So welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really pleased to have you here. And I know that you've been also following the Women of Web3 journey for a long time. And it should be really nice to connect with you. Having spoken a lot over LinkedIn, now actually nice to see your face on my screen.
In-person connections, right?
So I'd love to hear more about who you are and how you got to where you are today. So a bit of your career history and how you ended up suddenly pivoting to AI. Or was it a sudden pivot?
No, I don't think it was a sudden pivot. I think it kind of evolved quite naturally. I've taken on many roles in my life. I've been like a bartender, a server, a marketing associate. I was a tour guide for an eco tour that educates tourists on wild horses on the Outer Banks. So many things. And my point is, I've always had a really positive attitude about switching careers and picking up hobbies. So during 2020, when the pandemic was in full swing, I started using Jasper.
Jasper's a copywriting AI tool, right?
Yes, they are. So yeah, I was just using this as like a soundboard for my inner thoughts, really. And then I fast forward. So March of last year, I was working at Commerce Tools and they were like, okay, we're going to roll out generative AI. Would you like to, you know, volunteer to be the AI task force lead for our marketing org? And this was before ChatGPT made the news and really boomed and took over everything. So I was like, sure. There wasn't a lot of resources online. So what I did was I just went to every single marketing department and I was like, what do you not like about your job that you would love to automate in order to make your job more enjoyable? So everybody gave me something and I told them the next time they were doing that task to take a video of it. And I took that video to multiple generative AI companies and I was like, this is the problem that they want to solve with your technology and this is what their workflow looked like. And then I asked the vendors to do the same and send me back the video of what that process would look like using their app. And so I kind of did like a little bit of matchmaking and then I moved on from rolling out generative AI to our marketing org to building our GPT that our sales org ran on. And it just kind of like took this natural evolution. I went from using Jasper every single day to rolling out multiple apps in my org to then I was like, okay, where are things missing the mark? Because I've been in the bull market for like the NFT and crypto boom and I saw how quickly the accessibility and the mass adoption really broke off and how fast. And once I saw that, I realized that we don't have the luxury of letting that happen again with AI if we're not really not pausing, but if we're not enforcing stricter rules and we're not buckling down on accessibility and diversity, then the people that make these tools aren't actually making technology that benefits everyone. They're only benefiting few. And I was like, I'm not going to let that happen again. And so that's really my relationship with AI. And that's what led me to creating my third business, which is the Prompt Community. And it's $20 a month. It's a subscription-based community and users come in. They have a safe place to learn. There's 3 events every single week. So they get to meet different people. I have like fun events, like every Wednesday is like Wacky Wednesday. And somebody comes in and talks about how they're using generative AI to like create poetry or pottery and just like the wildest, most fun use cases that you wouldn't ever think about. And then on top of that, I have every single month, I have a new vendor that comes in and sponsors so that every single person in the community gets a free seat to that application for 30 days and they can try it out on their own before purchasing it. Because I just think that the knowledge needs to be shared a little bit more and people need to have a safe place to go. And most importantly, they need to have fun in order to encourage them to keep to keep going. So that's been my whole 180 journey with coming into AI.
That's awesome. And I'm definitely borrowing that idea of sponsorship being access to a sort of freemium model of these products. I think that's really smart. And I also think a lot of people in the Women of Web3 community would really benefit from being able to test some of these paid for tools. Just briefly, actually, going back to your Web3 experience, you said it was while everything was still doing really well. Am I right in thinking did you say you were doing some work for MyBFF at the time?
Yeah. I was a contract worker for MyBFF at the top of the bull market. I believe it's in 2021. That those years are like all a blur of the pandemic. But they were one of the biggest women-founded NFT companies that was doing such a great job about educating other women in the space and making sure there's room for other women, specifically women of color in the LGBTQ+ community. And I remember like even being a part of that group and seeing all the women come in, there was still this, and I'm sure you see this all the time, this like bro mentality of like for every 1 to 2 women-founded companies that were educating women, there was like 10 other male-dominated ones that were just popping up and getting funding. And so I started to see some like the same parallels. And I you know, it's one thing if you don't know what's coming and you've been at the forefront of a technology movement, but when you do see what happens and you understand the macroeconomics and how everything comes back around full circle, then you can prepare yourself a little bit better for what to expect and where you can solve problems that you know already exist and are going to come out again.
So is that saying Web3 is going to come back?
Yes, it's absolutely going to come back. I don't think it ever left. If you go in there and you see how many big businesses like JP Morgan, for example, they are buying up virtual real estate today still. So if anyone's ever saying like Web3 is gone, I would encourage you to go see how much virtual land is available in places like Decentraland. It's very few and people have never stopped building.
Awesome. And then switching back then to your focus on AI now, which I think is really smart to go after that. And I really like your approach. So on your Prompt Me newsletter, I really like all the 70s branding because I love a retro look, and there's definitely some aesthetic needs not being met in the sort of AI landscape.
Yes.
So really like the 1970s branding. But I also really like the fact that it just feels like it's got more soul than a lot of the other AI focused content out there, which is often actually generated by AI. And so it can end up very sterile. And the stuff that you share is more human than that. It's thinking about, okay, what do people really actually want? So what are we trying to do with any technology? And sort of coming back to, what people's objectives? What are we trying to achieve here? And then looking at, okay, so how can an AI tool help you get there? Rather than just being fixated on the tech and be like, look at all the shiny things it can do.
Yes.
So I liked your short walkthroughs as well that you're sort of on YouTube. Again, they're just kind of short and sweet and just quite helpful. And just more human than a lot of the AI content that I also follow, which actually does tend to be very male as well. So maybe that's also why some of that stuff's not speaking to me, is it is more masculine in branding and tone, etc. And there's something different about your stuff. I really like it.
Thank you. It's been nice to kind of tap into this like feminine energy, because like I love, tapping into the masculine energy, but also it's kind of fun to just do this rebrand. Like everything in AI is robots. And it's like, we get that there's a robot component, but that doesn't mean that has to be the branding. It can have some body and warmth. And I just think it's so much easier to come in and be like, let's get groovy, guys, and drop some disco balls and make people like loosen up and have fun and embrace learning a little bit more. I also love that I get to show the cringy process. So like I will give the prompts and then I video myself doing them. So you could hear all my ums and likes and see all the cringy things I misspell. But that's actually how you get people to adopt this, is seeing how you do it so that they see how you did it and what result you got, and they can get that same result. It drives me crazy when people are like, I did this in 5 days. And it's like, did you? Then show us.
Yeah.
Like, don't just talk about it. Show us, because that's really where we can see, your muscle. So flex it.
Yeah. You're right. There's a lot of that missing. Is sometimes actually what we want the answer to is almost like, show me how you do your job. So like what you're saying with them at Commerce Tools, the fact that you're going and speaking to actual marketers about what is the thing that you're doing, and they're doing a little video walkthrough of it, and then showing that to supplier side, that's really smart, because actually a lot of the time we're talking about things in these very lofty ways, and actually sometimes it would just really help to either sit next to them or see a video of, okay, what are you actually doing on your screen? Okay. And like, and then similarly, okay, so here's a step-by-step on my screen, what it looks like to improving and get the best out of this technology, which again, I think you're good at sort of showing how to it's not even like optimized, because again, that's just too sterile. But yeah, basically, yeah, how to get the best out of this stuff so that you get the thing that you want.
Absolutely. And it gets me to do more humanizing, because that's what humans are innately good at. And I don't have to do a bunch of other things that take so much of my time that I can automate, because creating content used to take me like 10 to 15 hours a week. And I feel like that's embarrassing to say, but I will throw myself under the bus because I'm a perfectionist, and now it takes 5 hours. And that's for one newsletter, one blog, 2 video tutorials, 5 LinkedIn posts, 5 Instagram posts, 10 tweets, and 1 product review. And that's weekly.
Wow. You're taking on a lot, because presumably, because, you know, you're still in early days, presumably you're doing all of that yourself.
Yes.
Yes, with support from AI, but like that, yeah, that is a lot. I'm impressed, and also impressed that you can just like list off the number of each. So what's an example of how you might use AI to go from 15 to 5 hours?
Yeah. So my tech stack, I mean, it does change because I do like to test new products. I think we're too early in the phases of AI to necessarily be super brand loyal. I will say I have more loyalty to Jasper because I have been using them since 2020. So I don't have to iterate anything at this point, which is really nice. But my tech stack is Notion for creating, planning, and then checking on performance. There is a guy named Zach, and he has this product called Deep Brain, and it's this Notion book with so many templates on how to organize, because he's a huge creator.
What would you say the name of it was?
Deep Brain.
Okay, Deep Brain.
Yes. And it's this kit of templates on Notion, and it's prepackaged so that you can just purchase it. You have all these templates, and then you can plan your content, your ideas, your performance, and project manage all in Notion, which is super nice. And then I use a combination of Jasper, ChatGPT, or Gemini. So what I do is I have a PDF, and it's somewhere between, I always add to it. So I know it's somewhere between 40 and 80 pages of my writing examples. And I upload it into the GPT, and I'll say, like, here is my matrix. Here's my audience's problems, what they like, what they don't like, what they care about. Here's the content planning that I have. Here is 40 to 60, whatever pages of my writing. Hone this in and create a weekly strategy for me. And then from there, I have the bones of what my weekly content is going to look like. And like I said, I went from, I'm not kidding, probably 12 to 15 hours of working on this to 5 hours, which has allowed me to go figure out how to grow my YouTube and figure out how to write better newsletters. And then I was able to, you know, also hire my first employee because I wasn't working on how to create the actual business. Like from start to finish, I was able to create my business in 10 days using multiple generative AI applications, because I was thinking, I don't want to bring on an employee to do all of this work when they're really good at networking and they could be doing things that, one, bring them more joy, because who wants to get hired and be going through like Excel sheets and Google Docs and throwing them into Notion and organizing it when they could be practitioners and teaching about this and learning about this and connecting with people. So I use generative AI to get to the people faster so that I could start to enjoy things. Because as a business owner, I'm sure you know this, if you don't enjoy what you do, you are screwed. It's not going to get any easier. You really have to love what you do. So why not help those parts that you don't like become minimal so you can do more that you love?
Wow. This is also very meta that you've used generative AI to build a business about AI, but I really like that. And it's very natural that would be the case. Has growing the Prompt Me newsletter and now your Prompt community, has that led to any kind of interesting opportunities? Or I suppose, what are you up to with it? So like, I love the content side of it. And then, yeah. Or maybe like, what are your longer term plans, if you're able to share, if they're not top secret?
Yes, I would love to. So I will say the newsletter was kind of like my beta test, because I had a hunch. I thought I knew my audience. I was networking and doing this stuff for a year. And I was like, I'm just going to start a newsletter. And I think the first one went out sometime the first week of January. I can't remember the exact date. And from January to the end of February, I went from 0 contacts to 500, a little over 500. And I was like, okay, so I'm right about the audience. I am right about the pain points. These, you know, my audience members are, you know, busy professionals, not necessarily marketing. Some are sales, some are HR. But the main commonalities were they want to use generative AI to have more of a work-life balance, right? Because who doesn't? And they don't have time to disrupt their workflows. So they really want tools that integrate nicely, don't we all? Because we've been promised this forever. And they don't have a lot of time to learn it. And they don't necessarily have a lot of trust, which is totally fair because these tools are brand new. And so kind of growing that newsletter and really, one, like it got me to get back into writing. And if you see the earliest, you know, iterations of this newsletter, you can see that I was a newbie and I didn't really know what I'm doing. And now to fast forward and see the newsletters now, you can really see the evolution of my writing and communication style. So it allowed me to get better at things I needed to. And it also opened up doors to the prompt community, which launches on May 1st. And it, like I said, it's a subscription-based community. I have 1,000 people that are already on the wait list for this thing because of the newsletter. And I really think that that was kind of my launching point to building the prompt community. I have a book coming out in this summer.
Wait, what?
It's, yes.
What's it called? Are you allowed to tell me that?
I am allowed to tell you that, but the title is How to Build a Business in 10 Days. So from start to finish, incorporating it and building it.
Oh my God.
And just how to get scrappy. There's no secrets. I have all of my terrible, ugly handwritten notes from my legal pads from like the early days of like, you have X amount of money and you need to make it stretch to Y. Here's what we're doing in the workflows. I gave every trick and trade away. And then there's a conference coming. I can't give away the timeline, but I can say later this year. And it's going to bring a lot of people together and not just like the big creators, because I think there's a time and place for them, but this nice little niche of people that are in the middle, because there's something more refreshing about learning from a creator who, you know, they're not starting from zero, but they're very much in the trenches still. So they can give you these trade secrets and they can help you out while they're doing it. Because once you make it, you know, you're still learning things, but it's harder to remember the early days when you have to be scrappy. And it just benefits everybody a little bit more. And I think it puts people at ease because they're like, okay, they have a following, they are creators, but they're not so big that they're not relatable, you know?
Mm-hmm. Can I just check, when you're talking about the early days, are you talking about January 2024?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So bearing in mind, I think this episode will go out in approximately mid to late April, but we're recording the end of March and you're talking about January 2024 as though it's like ancient history. I know it can feel like that in like emerging tech, but that's, I can't believe you've also got a book coming out. Like, what is going on? Okay, what are you drinking?
Lots of coffee. I'm a mom to a toddler, so yeah, there's like an endless supply of coffee. It would be easier if I just like had an IV drip of it, honestly.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I need to learn some stuff from you. Seriously, like that's amazing. I mean, people have been asking me about like how I like do it all with a 2-year-old and things like that with limited childcare in place, but actually I'm not doing it at this kind of growth level you're talking about in terms of like that, you know, that volume of content going out and like the fact you've already like literally like scored a book deal and doing a massive conference. This is insane. I'm honestly, kudos to you.
Thank you. I will say, so a lot of it, you know, there were things that I was able to automate with AI, but a lot of it's just like breaking things that were meant to be broken. And when I say that, I mean, when I was looking at, you know, this is going to be my third business, or it is my third business technically. When I was looking at this, I was like, okay, what is needed from these big generative AI vendors? Well, first of all, they need to change their hiring policies to make sure that they're getting, you know, more diverse people in there, specifically women, and even more specifically women of color and the LGBTQ plus community members in. And so I was like, okay, I have a few options here. But, you know, the micro moments that I was thinking about were, you know, when I was looking at hiring my first person, I could have easily put a post on LinkedIn and been like, okay, please apply, please do this. But I was like, again, I'm one person. I already know all the things that I have to do. Realistically, I won't be able to get back to probably all those people that do apply. I don't want that to be a crappy experience. I want to go against the grain. And even if it takes a little bit more of my time, do things differently. So what did I do? I headhunted on LinkedIn. Fun fact, there's 4.2 million people on LinkedIn and 1.1 million of them are open to work. So that's a huge group of people that are paying for LinkedIn Premium, which is like, you know, not cheap, and they're actively trying to get jobs. And so instead of putting out a job application where everyone came to me, I started going through, and I think I made it through, it was like probably 10 to 20,000 people. My husband and I, you know, we had a chart and we went through everyone and we were just looking for, you know, people that weren't trying to cause diversion and people that were consistently showing up on their social media. And even if it didn't look pretty, they were trying and they were being consistent. Because at the end of the day, that is what being an entrepreneur is you show up regardless of how you feel and you consistently put in the work and eventually it pays off. And so that's how I found actually my first three hires was doing that and just observing them and being able to streamline, you know, the beginning hurdles of building a business with generative AI allowed me the time to do that, because that's really important to me to make sure that my group is diverse, because I want to make sure that everyone that joins the community sees representation and feels comfortable. And, you know, everybody really does have equity here.
Yep. It's much needed. And actually that's the conversation we've been having. So amongst Women of Web3 in the community is like, how do we make sure that we show that just having women in the title doesn't mean, so it's not for men, it doesn't mean that. And it's also partly that we really want to sort of support marginalized genders as well as people that would call themselves women. But also, you know, our events are also open to every single type of person. And so I think maybe we need to be a bit more intentional in some of the language that we're using or like how we're showing up. I think to some extent we're getting it right. But yeah, maybe some guys would sort of think, oh, I'm not like allowed or supposed to turn up to this stuff. Or it's harder to be an ally. Maybe we need to make it a bit easier to do that stuff. And so so I'm completely agree with you about the need for like partly showing people that this community is diverse, but also that community, you have a diverse community or set of people building and architecting what comes next is so important because it feels like we've got a lot of aligned values there in terms of getting technology into everyone's hands.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and it just goes to show you too, you know, it's not that hard to change your hiring process. Now, given I know that it's, you know, me running the business right now, but it just takes people saying like, this isn't working and changing it and trying it out, you know, and it does take a little bit more time, but imagine how much powerful your community and your business would be if you intentionally went and sought these people out, because there are women in the space that want jobs. There are many, many women. So that's not an excuse anymore. There's way more qualified women out there now than there ever has been. You just have to find them. You, as the employer, as the hiring manager, have to go out and intentionally find them and make sure that you're being aware of your own internal biases. And, you know, if you're looking at your lineup and you have 20 applicants and none of them are women, like, let's just pause right there and mull that over and change that outcome. And you hear about this all the time. You know, businesses, I think Coinbase actually was one of the most recent ones a couple weeks ago where they made the news because their executives and their C-suites actually have to give the sign off on all their employees, and they are not a small company. And I know a lot of people had really divisive opinions about that, but I think for them to come out and be like, I think we're missing the mark and we have an issue to the point that this needs to happen, you know, whether that specific process works for them and solves this problem or not, at least they're admitting that they didn't have a great hiring process and they're saying what they're doing to change that. And that's the kind of transparency I expect from myself, from vendors, from other people, is just to show up, do their best. And then when you don't know something, just be like, I don't know, but I would love help and I would love to do better.
Much needed. And we've definitely been finding that employers are maybe a bit less interested to try and reach women or have more female candidates in who's applying for stuff. They certainly recognize that it's somewhat of an issue. So I remember quite a few blockchain and based companies we were speaking to last year were basically saying we're having between 1% and 5% female applicants, which is crazy low. You know, not going to hire every female applicant that that does apply. And so you've got incredibly low numbers of women in the Web3 space. But there was also a bit of a disconnect for them that, like, still a lot of Web3 employers are requiring a certain amount of experience working in the Web3 space. But, like, that means you're picking from a really small pool of people and actually is certainly off-putting to women as who will sort of ultimately count themselves out of, like, well, I haven't got any experience working in it. You know, I might have been, like, spending all my waking hours, like, dabbling in this stuff in my spare time, but they're like, well, I haven't got work experience, so count me out, not right for the role. But there is still a massive opportunity to change that. Saying that, we basically sort of deprecated our jobs side of our business for now. I think we might end up revisiting it later if employers really see the need to bring more diverse applicants into this emerging tech space, which hopefully eventually they'll wake up to. But it felt like there's been interest on the sort of jobs board and the talent collective. There was interest from the candidate side and very little interest from employer side, which it feels like a shame and like a missed opportunity. But yeah, for now, we've kind of parked that idea. I've realized we are, as Women of Web3, we're essentially a content business. Like we make the Women of Web3 podcast. We host events, including, so far the in-person ones have been in London, but we will expand that to global, but we also do more and more online events. And we make social content. And so rather than trying to complicate it with like, we also have a talent side of our business, or we're also trying to like drive real policy change. Those are all really valid and valuable and well connected to what we care about, but actually we can't execute all those things, certainly not as a really lean team. So yeah, do a couple of things really, really well first, and then reconsider what we expand to. And that, you know, maybe there is a sort of space for more like a like pure recruitment side of things later, but it's not right for right now.
No, absolutely not. And I think it would be, you know, premature if you did it right now too, because that wouldn't also mean that the employers and the companies that are hiring for these roles have an understanding that what they're requesting is kind of unheard of. And I think that that's a mountain that, you know, you're more than welcome to climb. But I think that what they're going to realize is, you know, one of the biggest titles that has come out recently is Chief AI Officer. And even with like having my experience being using generative AI since 2020, so 4 years now, and rolling it out to, you know, an enterprise company, I don't consider myself an expert. So it's so funny to me that, you know, all of a sudden we have like these AI experts that pop up. And if you look at these job descriptions, it's like, you know, doctorate degree and PhD, you know, and it's like, do you actually need that though? Because I have a marketing background and I know how to talk to people. I've been using these tools. And once I understood on a me level, on an Ashley level, how generative AI could enhance my life, give me more time with my toddler, because spoiler, I don't love working 18-hour days. Then I was like, ooh, we're going to go back to school and we're going to learn why this LLM does that and how to code and how to build our own, you know, LLMs, depending on the use case. And so I graduate with my data science degree this year, but it's only because I was passionate and curious and I leaned into that curiosity and it evolved into the point of me justifying going back to school to get that bachelor's degree, because I was like, okay, I get it. I know how it relates to me and impacts me, how it impacts others. And now I'm going to do something about it. So I don't think that it has to be this linear journey for anyone. And it shouldn't really ever have had to be. It's just know what you know, keep working, and know that there is room at the table for everybody and your time will come. And I pray it's soon, because as soon as these employers know that what they're asking for is unheard of and one size fits all does not work, and I don't think it really ever has, then magic will happen.
That's brilliant. And just to kind of allay any fears amongst listeners that you need to go and study for a bachelor's in data science, I know this is also something you basically preach about, is that like this stuff is appropriate for anybody and everybody. Like, yes, you know, a generative AI, you just have to speak to it like a human. So that's one of the things that's really exciting about things like ChatGPT and competitor products. But given we have a lot of newbies in our audience, what do you think is something that people really need to know about AI, or even a misconception about it maybe?
Something that they should know is you don't have to understand the history of LLMs to use it and get value out of it. If that's not your cup of tea, don't worry, you're fine. And then something like an air of caution, I would say, you know, as exciting as this technology is, there's a reason why you're seeing lots of AI ethicists pop up. There's a very big need and sentiment to safeguard this. And if you don't know how to read SEC agreements and privacy policies, and you don't know how to figure out where the data is stored, because it does differ from vendor to vendor, just buddy up. That's the easiest way to learn about any new technology, is find someone that does know this or knows a little bit more than you do. And then that way you can see what tools they've already tried and what they know. And it's not like you're starting from zero. You can find that happy medium. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that on the buddying up. You almost need like a sort of learning circle. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if you've done something like this already, of just basically almost like get a bunch of people on a Zoom call, or like 10 people, like, right, how are you using it? Or like, what's just basically, you know, watching other people use AI, which sounds a bit ridiculous, but it's just really valuable because it's a nascent technology and, you know, it's literally changing by the day anyway, is you just want to see how other people make use of it, get the best out of it. Where would you see things going next, given that you've been sort of closely following progress in this space? It's obviously quite hard to make predictions of something like where might things be in a year or 2 years, but where do you see things going at a sort of trends level?
So two different ways. So very similar to, you know, when you're looking at e-commerce and you talk about whether or not, you know, you have these APIs where you can plug them and play them, or you have this one monolithic structure that you purchase and you get everything that comes in that package, regardless if you need it or not. I see that happening with AI, because why would you pay for, you know, one giant vendor that has multiple features if you don't use them all, or you don't want to use them all, or maybe they're not accessible because they're super expensive. So I see that happening, where we will very much see, and we already are seeing this, you know, there was $7 billion worth of funding in 2023 for generative AI companies. So there's so many out there. And they pop up every single day. So if you don't want to go with a big giant and try to have one tech that solves all your problems, because take away the AI part of it, no one tech has ever solved all of our problems. So why, if it has this AI sticker on it, would that solve all of our problems? It won't. That's one aspect of this. And then the other aspect, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this because you have that NFT and women in Web3 and crypto background, is I very much see users wanting to and demanding more from vendors. I always teach people that you should be holding these vendors accountable, and you should be asking them the hard questions. And if they don't have the right answers, then you don't have to purchase their technology. You just don't. So instead of giving all of your data to one vendor, give the data to the vendors that have mission statements that align with you and values that align with you, and you genuinely like them and trust them. That's where I see it going and where I'm already seeing people heading. And I love that.
One tool that I've noticed in the last few days and I'm sure maybe it will seem like ancient history already by the time the episode comes out, is Pi AI. Have you heard of that one?
Yes, I love texting Pi.
So for anyone that unfamiliar, or yeah, maybe it'll be dominant in the, like in the limited period before this episode comes out, is it describes itself as the emotionally intelligent AI. And so you write to it in natural language in the same way as you would something like ChatGPT, and then you choose which voice you would like as your AI, and it will reply to you and speak in a really natural way. And to me, it also feels more feminine. Some of the language, certainly some of the branding. As I say, some of my aesthetic needs hadn't been met, and like now with Pi, they are, of like beautiful fonts, and even like sort of quite inspiring imagery as to kind of prompting you as to what you want to be getting out of your AI. And I'm just not really seeing that elsewhere. That, you know, when you open something like ChatGPT or Google Gemini, it's sterile. It's hard to feel inspired to kind of go and make the most out of it. You basically already have to know a little bit about how to train your beast.
Yes. And I think another great example of that is Apollo. So that's who I use. They're not a CRM. My CRM is technically MailChimp. But that's where I get all of my emails from. That's where I do like all my data cleaning. And they've completely disrupted that. So their main competitors are like ZoomInfo, Sixth Sense, HG Insights. And one, if you've ever worked with any of those tools, you know that they're not cheap. And, you know, some of them sometimes work, some of them don't, depending on what your needs are. So I love seeing these AI companies that are actually disrupting these, because their pricing is super affordable. So they're disrupting an industry that very much needs disrupted. Something that really pushed me to go with them is the way that they, because depending on like where you sit globally, there's GDPR, there's other laws and legalities that you have to swim through. So I really like how they get users to consent to sharing their data. Because as a employer, it's kind of like this gray area of like, I want to make sure I'm doing things ethically, but like, I also need to run a business and I need to get the contacts. So like, where's that middle ground of like, I can trust you and you're going to hold yourself accountable. And then like, you can trust me. I'm going to use this data accountably and ethically. And I think like, just that's just one example of a company that's doing that really well and disrupting tech, which is what we want sometimes. I mean, if someone could disrupt going to the DMV, that would be amazing, because that's snail mail, but fingers crossed.
I'm conscious that I haven't asked like half the questions that I was planning to, because I keep asking you more about the things that you say and I'm like, oh, actually, what's that? Or like, tell me more. So having not asked you half the questions I was planning to, I want to know, what do you think is one of the most needed skills in the next internet?
Communication, empathy, and understanding human psychology.
Yeah.
Those would be the three, I would say.
Yeah, because actually if the IQ is covered by AI, then EQ is going to be what is left and what is actually probably valuable. And hopefully that also means that some of women's soft skills that they excel in are valued differently in future.
Yes.
And what about learning resources? Is there a place that, because you're also the one creating a lot of learning resources, but where do you go to go and learn lots, or what are you listening to, or what's helpful?
I go everywhere. I always try to go for the free resources because I think that they're so underrated. There's so many free things out there. Obviously, Women in Web3, I love. The newsletters that I love specifically, I would say Simply AI. So it's the CTO of HubSpot that created that one. And then another great place to go is the Marketing AI Institute. They put out so much information on a daily basis. And then TLDR AI, that's a really good newsletter. I think that's a good variety and diversity of perspectives.
Nice. I hadn't heard of that second one, Marketing AI Institute. That's going in my notes. And then what's been the most helpful strategy or tip that's kind of got you to where you are today, or maybe like a mindset that's got you to where you are today?
Probably when you're scared, stressed, nervous, any of the above, go do some research, because knowledge really is power. And especially right now with the loud media, it's important for you to understand what you need to pay attention to in order to actually help you, and then unsubscribe and cut out the noise for the rest of it. So I would say go do research anytime you're in doubt.
That's super useful. And I also hope that that's what Women of Web3 can like help people with, is distinguish the signal from the noise of like, there's so much hype and bluster and like over the top headlines about things like AI and Web3. And it's either like the metaverse is dead, or like AI is going to change everything. The robots are knocking at the door. And actually, yeah, there are a lot of fearful people out there, partly made fearful by all these headlines about, you know, AI is coming for your job. So it's really important to have people almost like curating this information, feeding people the stuff that actually matters. It's like, yes, there's all this stuff coming. What do you need to pay attention to? So
totally agree with you on that stuff. I found this super, super interesting, actually, and I'm hoping people are going to be like sitting there writing loads of notes. I know that if I was a listener of this show, I literally have been making notes as we're chatting. So it's a good sign. So Lastly, Ashley, where can people find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. And then can I leave them with a quote? It's not my quote, but it's one of my favorite quotes. Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. So it's really, really important to safeguard your thoughts, because that will manifest out into the world. So make sure, that's kind of why I'm big on knowledge is power. Go make decisions for yourself based on research, and then everything gets a lot easier and clearer.
Awesome. This has been brilliant. So yeah, thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
For listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're at a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.